Why, hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Support comes from United Way of the Greater Capital Region, Albany, New York. Investing in education, financial stability, and health. UnitedWayGCR.org. Well, Cyber Monday, the gift-giving holidays are looming. Computers and other digital gadgets are likely to play a part in your holiday season. Fortunately, today, we have Tony Yang here to answer all your tech-related questions. Tony started Gig Computers in 1996 while studying computer science at the State University of New York at Albany. The company began as a hobby in college, quickly blossoming into one of the largest PC retailers in the area. Tony has been managing networks for numerous companies and organizations, including this one, ranging from a few computers to many hundreds, and we're somewhere in between here at WAMC. Always nice to have Tony on the show. Welcome back, sir.
Thank you, Ray.
Happy Thanksgiving to you.
Happy Thanksgiving to you, too.
To join today's conversation, call 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can also post your comments at the bottom of today's show page on the Vox Pop section of our website. It's wamc.org/VoxPop. You can comment below today's Vox Pop wall post on our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/WAMC Radio. Or you could tweet your questions and comments at WAMC Vox Pop. Or you can even email us, voxpop@wamc.org. And again, the number to call, 800-348-2551. So it's going to be a big shopping time coming up, if it's not already, and the stores open earlier and earlier everywhere. The big gadget this year is?
PlayStation 4 and Xbox One.
All right, which is better? I hear a lot. I hear both sides of this story. I hear, oh, wow, Xbox is no good compared to PS4, and then the other is true as well.
Yeah, you know, they both have a huge loyal fan base. It depends on what you do. I think graphics-wise, PlayStation have always been slightly ahead.
Yeah.
Same thing with the new consoles that are coming out. The PlayStation 4, for example, it's got a 1080p output.
Well, that's nice.
Xbox One is 720.
Oh, really? And what's the Xbox 360? We Santa brought one.
I think that was 480p.
Last year. It still looks good.
They still look good.
You know, Tony, when I, back in the 70s, we were very far ahead of the curve in my household. The neighbors were all jealous because we had an Odyssey gaming system. And I don't even know if you recall what the Odyssey gaming system was.
My earliest one was a Commodore 64.
Okay, well, this was a standalone unit, and it had two wired controllers,
yeah.
And basically it was black and white. You could play the equivalent of video table tennis, and it had plastic overlays that you taped onto your TV screen.
Oh, wow.
To play different games. And then it had these little computer cards, metal cards that you stuck in to change the two little blips on your screen to do other things.
Wow.
It wasn't all that exciting.
No.
Unless you like table tennis.
A lot more exciting these days to play these the new console that are out.
It's amazing. I mean, you know, I always stay one generation back. So we're on the Xbox 360 right now. It blows my mind. Yeah. It's so entertaining.
And they have come a long way.
I keep wondering how much more they can do, but every year they continue to do more, and it's a hot item. Well, we have a full lineup of calls, 800-348-2551. Let's go to Mark in Albany. Hi, Mark. You're on with Tony Yang.
Yes, thanks. I'm going to be buying an iPad very soon, maybe this weekend, and I'm going to need cell phone capability, but I may not be ready at the time of purchase to pick a cell long-distance provider. Will I have the option of deferring that decision, or do I have to do it at the time of purchase?
Well, that's a great question. In other words, can you buy one without buying a plan?
Yeah.
Yeah, Mark, that all depends on who you choose as a provider. If you get, for example, Verizon, cell service, that's exclusively for Verizon. So you wouldn't be able to switch providers once you're committed to a Verizon iPad.
Well, now, why is that? The iPad is an iPad is an iPad. Isn't there just a little card in there with a SIM?
They actually use very different technologies. One is on CDMA. The other one is on TDM, I think is what it's called.
But the iPads are the same, though, yes?
The iPads are the same, but the communications chip within it are very, very different.
Okay, and you can't swap those out?
You can't swap those out between Verizon and other vendors. Now, between T-Mobile, for example, and AT&T, they are interchangeable.
Compatible. Okay.
So it depends on who you go with.
So you can't buy a what they call a jailbroken unit just on Craigslist or whatnot, and
cannot not when it comes to cell phone service.
Okay.
So if I buy from an independent vendor, it would have to buy hardware, which would either be Verizon or non-Verizon.
That's right. I mean, you could get these what they call a open vendor iPad 3, but it will only still work with T-Mobile or AT&T, but not with Verizon.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you, Mark. We appreciate it. It's Vox Pop on WAMC, the computer show. We do one of these every once in a while, and our guest is Tony Yang. 800-348-2551 is the number. Brad in Burnt Hills, you're on.
Hey, Tony, how are you doing today?
Good. How are you doing, Brad?
Good, good. I have a question. We're looking to purchase a computer for a business that I'm a part of. And whenever I'm purchasing computers, I always have to compare the refurbished computers to the brand new computers that you can buy. And it always seems like, you know, they figured out the pricing on this so that you go back and forth on your decision making. But in your opinion, is there any problem with a refurbished computer versus a new computer? And then the second part of this question would be, would it make any difference if it was a PC versus a Mac? You know, does that change your thoughts on that?
Okay. Brett, I have computers coming back from customers that have purchased them 12, 13 years ago, and they still run.
Yeah.
So it depends. Some refurbished units can be great, and they can last for many, many years. The only thing that I will add to that is new PCs are so inexpensive these days. If you're buying a computer, I would mostly suggest that you get a new PC, unless you can get a great deal on a refurbished one that's only a year or 2 years old. These PCs, you know, you can buy complete setup now for $400 to $500. So I don't know how much lower you can get that on a refurbished unit. So from an economic perspective, I think it would be a better decision to buy a new PC. Then you get the warranty and everything with it.
So I guess specifically what I'm looking at is I'm looking at an iMac. And the difference between an iMac, 27-inch screen iMac, the newer model is about $1,800, and then you can get a refurbished model that's a, you know, a little bit of, I think it's like a 2.7 gig processor, which isn't the newest and fastest, but that doesn't matter for where we're at. Mm-hmm. However, the refurbished model is about $400 cheaper. I would love to go with a PC and save that money, but our office is already set up with Macs, and it's done that way for certain reasons. But we would have to redo a lot if we went with a PC.
I see. The on the Mac front, Macs are, in my opinion, made much better. So they actually last longer than most PC hardware out there. So for $400. If you got two Macs that are about the same specs, I will probably get the refurbished one.
But what about the warranty? You get a full warranty on the new one, though, yeah?
That's a big thing. And that's your insurance. That's the insurance money that you have to kind of look at and see if you want that peace of mind.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Brad, have a great Thanksgiving. Thanks for calling. 1-800-348-2551. Tony Yang is our guest. Jamie in Ellenville is next. Jamie.
Hi. How you doing, Gray? I'll try to be tight as compared to political. I got two really quick questions. One's about updating on Macs and that my DVD player, I'm convinced, like, stopped working when I did one update, but it tells me I don't have a laser light, power is unaligned. Is that a hardware issue, or is that something that I'm getting that the software still doesn't run mine? It's a MacBook Pro. I got about 2007, late. With a Core Duo, you know.
What is the laser light? Is that a for
That
sounds
like
CDs.
That sounds like the laser light. That's the message that you're getting on your computer.
Yeah, you know, every time, like, listen, I went from 10.68. I finally, like, you know, nothing would work anymore. So they, even though they say they're giving away their software for free now, mm-hmm. I had to pay $20 to go to the next version before I can get into the free world. And even with that update, you know, my DVD drive reads, but I get this crazy laser light, not enough power message.
Huh. You know? Yeah, that sounds like a hardware problem. You might want to maybe just either get that replaced or use an external DVD reader instead, right? That might be the easiest way.
More importantly, this is the more important question.
Okay.
About internet and about dual band modems. Like, I bought my own modem. I got Time Warner Cable. Even though they tell me that it wasn't going to work, even when I bought it online, they said it would work. The Surf 4-2 from Motorola.
Okay.
Really great modem, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, I get it without the software. I get it at a discount. And, like, I can't find anything to make. But the dual band, I realize now, it's not that I got a connection and then it sends it out wireless. Like, I have to have two separate connections from the beginning. Is that correct? Like, the wireless, like, is it possible that mine works on a Cat 10 and not on the wireless, that I can't get Time Warner to make it work? Or are they just getting mad at me that I bought my own equipment?
No, generally, you can always use your own wireless router. Now, are you talking about getting a wireless signal on your router that you bought?
I do have the signal. My modem shows I got a wireless signal.
Right.
But I can't get anything to pick it up, because I can't find the software, and I know Motorola is really screwed up right now.
Well, you know, the first thing you need to do when you get a new router is to log into it and configure it to broadcast specific signals, especially on a dual band. These things may not always be pre-configured for you. So I'm thinking that you might have some type of a configuration issue versus...
Yeah. Maybe it's locked on one channel.
Is it also possible that my Time Warner cable would support it in my, you know, wired connection, but not in the wireless band one?
If you get the modem from them, they will support both.
No, I didn't get it from them. Of course not.
Yeah. Ah, wow. Yeah. There's the rub.
So, garbage. I wanted something that worked.
All right. Hey, Jamie, we gotta take a break here. Let's take a break, Zach, and then we'll come back with more calls. Yes, more calls. It's Tony Yang. It's Computers. It's Vox Pop. More on the way.
Support for WMC comes from Smith College Museum of Art, presenting River of Gold, pre-Columbian treasures from C.T. Ocati, gold work from an ancient American society in central Panama, smith.edu/artmuseum for info. Rhinebeck Equine Hospital, providing a team of equine specialists in medicine and surgery, open 24 hours, 365 days a year for emergency services, rhinebeckequine.com. The Arkell Museum at Canajoharie, presenting the exhibition Dinotopia, the Fantastical Art of James Gurney, arkellmuseum.org. Molly Cantor Pottery, with Paint Your Own Ornaments During Moonlight Magic in Shelburne Falls, Friday, November 29th, 1,200 luminary candles, the Parade of Lights, street performers, and more, mollycantor.com. And MySci, Museum of Innovation and Science, presenting holiday exhibit Trains and Toys, opening this Friday with Model Trains and Science Toys, MISCI.org.
Vox Pop on WAMC, a pre-Thanksgiving edition with Tony Yang here talking computers. And let's go over to Wolfgang in Pownall, Vermont. Hi, Wolfgang, you're on.
Hey, Ray, thanks for taking my call. Happy Thanksgiving to you guys.
You too.
I want to bring up a topic that was discussed a while ago, but I never got a call in on.
Oh, you emailed on this, didn't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember that. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, I was wondering what the real downside is to a cyber attack on the United States. I mean, I don't really see much happening. Any important system that's out there has got some kind of backup. I mean, missiles aren't going to launch and planes aren't going to fall out of the sky. You know, hospitals have electrical backup. We lose power in Vermont from time to time during storms, so... just like some discussion of what what really is going to happen? Okay. You know, are merchants going to close? I'm not going to be able to get my plane tickets. I mean, what is the real downside and danger from some kind of cyber thing that brings down the net or computers?
All right, great question.
Well, I mean, if you look at the most recent event with Edward Snowden, for example, he's released lots of NSA information that were proprietary and secret, obviously. You know, that the information that he released, as far as I know, didn't put anybody in actual danger. But you got information, for example, if somebody hacks into the CIA database, and steals the information on who our agents are out there, that could cause us a lot of problems.
But
besides
what about
national security?
I mean, you and I talked about an attack, and I think it was on a newspaper, and I forget which one. It was several months ago when you were on, and it was the Syrian, you know, the Friends of Syria or whatever the group was, you know, perhaps related, perhaps not to Syria. And so if a nation state wants to launch an attack on infrastructure, just what sort of effects, and I think this is what Wolfgang is getting at, what sort of effects can we expect to see?
Power grids could go offline. Our trains can stop running.
Really?
For example, in New York City, that entire MTA system runs on PCs.
But I mean, they ran before there were computers. There were power systems before computers. Are there not fallbacks?
I used to work for Amtrak, and we'd lose computer stuff and dispatch stuff, and we always have a backup, and we can always go to a manual paperwork system for moving stuff down the railroad. I mean, every important critical function, as far as I can see, has some kind of backup plan for when the computers go down. It would be foolish not to. And I don't see anybody dying or being in dire straits because, you know, they can't order something from Macy's online when the system goes down. As far as NSA goes, as far as I'm concerned, we're already under cyber attack from those guys because they're putting their nose where it doesn't belong and monitoring everything.
All right, now you're
and
changing
the claim
the show.
They make about we're not looking at it. Well, computer logic's looking at it, but they're the ones who are attacking us in our own country.
Well, now you're changing the show entirely, Wolfgang, and we got to do it.
Well, sorry about that.
But great points. I mean, in other words, if the financial infrastructure goes down, in other words, trading on Wall Street and things like that.
I was just thinking about that myself. Everything is computerized. There is no paper backup. I mean, we're not back to the days where you pick up a call and call your broker, say, you know what, give me 10,000 shares of this stock.
Yeah,
it's all computerized. And if you got somebody who's hacked into the system and they're purchasing 10 million shares of Citibank, for example, or they're dumping it, that could create chaos.
Interesting. Well, you know, Wolfgang, I'm glad you persevered and came through on this program. And someday we'll do an entire program on that because it's very interesting. And I certainly see your point that the day-to-day operation of those of us on the ground, you know, we'll still eat, we'll still drink, we'll still live. But anyway, great call. Thanks a lot. We appreciate it. Happy Thanksgiving. Harriet in Woodstock. Harriet, you're on.
Hello.
Hello.
I have a computer. It's a little laptop. I'm not you'd weep if you knew how little I know about this computer. But my question is that every day or every couple of days, I've got part of my program is like a spam protector, and it sequesters, I don't know, 15, 20, 25 messages that are considered spam, and then maybe five or six others that are called a virus. And I look through that every day because sometimes there's something that should have come to my email and hasn't. So I send that to it. But my question is, I mean, this stuff is pure, it's like alien space script. It's got consonants and numbers and Greek letters, and sometimes it's in Russian. Sometimes it's all the letters and numbers are in English, but they're usually all consonants. Mm. And underneath, it's in Japanese, or maybe it's in Chinese.
Yeah.
And it's just so crazy. And I think to myself, who on earth would click on this? And so why is it sent? What is it? Who's sending out all this totally weird stuff that I couldn't imagine anyone responding to?
You're dealing with spam, and spam is a big, big problem anywhere in the world, actually. Over 90% of the emails sent every day.
90%?
It is such a big problem that it's a federal felony. It's a crime. It's a federal crime to spam in this country. It's costing billions and billions of dollars every year because of the amount of spam that we get. So
what's the cost? What generates that cost? I mean,
it's mostly
Tony's fees, mainly.
That's what keeps us in business.
That's right.
Right?
That's right.
So you have these spammers out there who are sending emails. They're mostly for advertising. And if they get 1 out of 1,000 responding, that's a good hit because they're sending out millions and millions of these. Now, let me ask you this. Just for your problem specifically, whose email service are you using?
You mean what? I use a company called NetStep.
NetStep, okay. I'm not familiar with that company, unfortunately. But,
they're pretty small, and I stuck with them when I switched to a new a little laptop.
Sure.
Yeah.
The reason why I'm asking that is if you were with a service, let's say Yahoo Mail or Google or Gmail, Google Mail, they have anti-spam built into it. So it will filter out over 99% of these before it ever reaches your laptop. So
it is filtered out. That's what I get a notice to read so that I can go and look what they filtered out.
Oh, I see. Okay. Yeah. So they are filtering it out for you, except you have to go in there and look at it yourself.
Yes.
Ah, okay.
And some of it I actually want because it's from legitimate people. But my question was that it's gibber. It's pure unmitigated gibberish.
Yeah. Yeah.
Who would want
it's executable code, right?
Sometimes it is. And they're hoping people, will click on links on there. And things like that would give them access to your computer, for example, or information on your computer. One of the things you might want to consider doing is calling your ISP and tell them not to send you any, just delete all the emails that are foreign language based. They can do that.
Yeah.
That's what I do for a lot of our customers is, they don't do international business. So there's no reason to have anything besides English.
Yeah. No, and I also get... sometimes right into my email, I sometimes get something in Russian or Japanese.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Russian.
And the filter system doesn't filter those out.
That's right, because it can't read it.
I'm kidding.
So, yeah, that happens a lot. Yeah. So but there are other methods of blocking these emails.
Yes. Well, it's not so much that it bothers me because it goes in, it gets sequestered, and then I get to look at it or delete it without even looking at it.
Yeah.
I just was mystified as to what on earth could the purpose be? Because I'm never going to click on something that's in alien script.
Well, you'd be surprised who does, though,
And you're very smart about that, so that's good.
So you know some stuff about computers, Harriet. Good job.
Okay.
Thanks a lot.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, we appreciate it. And we go to Kenny in South Fallsburg. Kenny, you're on.
Oh, thanks. This is a question. Thanks for the show, by the way.
You're welcome.
This is a question I'm having for a couple of years now, and it's intensified since Steve Jobs died. I'm an Apple user since 95, and I've had numerous iPhones. I've got an iPad. And I'm just noticing, or it seems, that the Galaxy and even the Windows tablet seems to be outdistancing, and the Galaxy phone outdistancing the iPhone and the iPad by quite a lot in terms of just features now.
Yeah.
And I'm debating with myself. For example, you see that the Galaxy can do two things at once, and the fact that the iPad hasn't accepted Flash all this time, so some videos just don't play on it, things like that. And also, I have a personal thing. I do a lot of Facebook now, and I travel, and I'll take some video with my phone, and if it's over like 40 seconds, it wants to cut it down in order to send it to anything.
Yeah.
And a friend of mine had a Galaxy. He said, I can send any size video right here, Facebook, email, whatever. So it seems like the very practical features are really starting to outdistance those other two, those other products. And I wondered if you could comment on that.
You know, the latest iOS upgrade.
iOS 7. It's point whatever.
It's, I think it's a, it's a, it's a bad upgrade.
Oh,
I
really? Mean, a lot of people have heard that.
I don't like the interface on there. I tell you, I'll give you an example of why I think it's been up. It's a bad upgrade. I have a year and a half old son at home, and he knew how to open up the older iPad. But since I did the upgrade, that little swipe bar on the bottom, it's gone. It's just the arrow now. So now he doesn't know how to open up the iPad anymore.
Isn't that a good thing?
Well, it is a good thing in some ways, but if you look at it, you know, one of the reasons why iPad got so popular was because it was so intuitive to use.
Right.
Any little, you know, any kid can use it.
And you get update fatigue because, for example, and a lot of friends might say the same thing. Every time you get an update for iTunes, you don't know how to use it again.
You know, I think
it's not any better, but now suddenly something you used to do, like burn a CD, so now you have to look all over the place.
Yeah, I think the genius of Steve Jobs is he knew what to pick out the best features that people would use,
right,
and makes it easier for other people to use. It seems to me it's just not the same anymore.
Oh, so you're suggesting now they are rudderless and they're going to be adrift?
Well,
you know,
I think
like
Steve Jobs was one of a kind.
Okay.
Well, right. the recent iPhone release, you know, I'm hoping maybe they'll have some of these features on it. Instead, they have fingerprints recognition.
Yes.
I got to tell you, I wasn't sitting here like, you know, just hoping for fingerprint recognition.
Wasn't highest on your priority list?
No, I don't even, you know, I don't even lock my phone. You know, I said, geez, that's great, you know, but what about some features, you know?
Yeah.
What do you think? Are the Windows Pad and the Galaxy products and the Samsung products, are they better now? Are they more powerful? Do they do more practical things, you know?
From a pure hardware perspective, the Galaxies and the Windows Surface Pads are much more powerful.
Hmm.
Than the
But they're actually
iPads.
Computers, right?
Yes. The Surface is basically a computer.
Right.
So, you know, the other thing about the amount of upgrades or the amount of technology enhancements that you see on these Windows and Android-based tablets is that you have many, many vendors out there producing
right.
these products. So they all want to get better
yeah.
constantly. Versus
and
Apple,
also USB
it's just
on
one
there
company.
Too, right?
Say it again, Kenny?
I say you also have USB on them too, right?
That's right. So, you know,
which makes it easier when I'm trying to transfer something to the iPad. I mean, it's got to be much more difficult than just dragging
all
something
right.
in a folder.
Well, we get your point. I mean, we don't want to spend the entire time bashing iPads.
No. This is a serious question from my point of view, whether or not to switch. And my final little cherry on top is the blackmail of it is that I have all my computers synced as far as my wife's and everything, as far as calendar and phone book. And can I still do that if I go out of their system and say, get a Galaxy phone and a Samsung pad?
Okay. All right.
Yes, you can still do all of that, except you can't do that on the Apple platform. You have to switch over. Right. You have to switch over to the to Google Mail, for example. That's got calendar and everything all built into it. So yes, Windows also have that feature. That's just the basic feature of tablets. So you can get that on any platform.
All right, Kenny. Thanks a lot, and have a great Thanksgiving. Okay.
You guys too. Thanks very much.
You bet. 1-800-348-2551. Tony Yang of Gig Computers, our guest. It's a computer show, as you may have been able to discern. Joel in Rexford. Joel.
Yes, I have a couple of fairly old desktop PCs running Windows XP. They are pretty much the same. My question is, if one of them is taking 4.5 to 5 minutes to boot up and really be prepared to go, and the other one's taking 20 seconds, 30 seconds max, is there something that I am able to do to get the one that is taking so long to get back down in the 30-second range to boot up?
Now, the one that's taking 30 seconds, is that a newer computer?
It's one that I don't use quite as much.
Okay.
In fact, I might use it 10% of the time just to keep it well-oiled.
Okay. The more software you load onto a computer, slower it's going to get. That includes boot up time as well. So there are a couple of things you can do. One is you can do a cleanup of the miscellaneous softwares that's on your computer, stuff that you may not even be using anymore. So just the general malware cleanup, virus cleanup, and sometimes even a registry cleanup could be a good thing. So that's one thing.
You're using terminology that I would love to see as something on my screen that I can just click on. Do I have to be some sort of technician in order to do that?
No, not necessarily. You can download software from malwarebytes.com. Just go onto their site and download.
.org, right? Is it .org?
I think they have .com as well. Okay. .org may be the free site.
Yeah, it's a great program, though. It's a free program.
The stuff on there you can download, and the whole process is automated. So you basically run the software to clean up your computer. Now, that's one thing. Second thing is you might want to consider, I was hoping somebody would call in about slower boot up speeds. Because one of the best things that's happened in the past few years are these SSD drives. They're basically memory-based hard drive systems. And they can get your boot up time from 5 minutes to 15 seconds just by changing that one little device. Now, they used to be very, very expensive, so we never recommended them. But now you can get one of these things for...
These are solid state.
They're solid state hard drives.
And the prices have really come down, because even a year ago, they were expensive.
They were very expensive. Now you can get 128 gig, for example, for $100.
You're kidding me.
And that thing just speeds it up so much. It's incredible. That's the best PC upgrade you can get for the money.
But I mean, for a computer, one thing I did, I have an old computer that is now 11 years old, or 10 or 11 years old, okay? And the boot up, like Joel, was very slow. And recently, I went in, I have a program, I think it's called CCleaner, and one of the options is it shows you all the programs that start up when you start your computer. Yeah. There were so many programs that I didn't need to run. If I need to run them, I can click on them and run them, but they automatically start with the computer.
That's right.
And it's
so what did you do to get keep them from coming into memory on startup?
This particular program that I had allows you to show the startup programs, and I would just click and disable them on startup. They're still on the computer. I can still use them if I want to, but they don't load automatically, and it cut the time dramatically that my computer takes to warm up.
I'm thinking that's what my major problem is. I don't need this 15-second capability, but it's really annoying when I go into 4.5 minutes when I know that I can do it in 30 seconds.
But I mean, Joe, that the Malware Bytes program that we mentioned, that also will give you a list of all the programs that you run that the computer loads up in the beginning. You can go in there and look at it, and it'll show you all the stuff that you're running, and just click off the ones that you don't need to run in the beginning, and that will speed up your PC significantly.
All right, Joel, we're going to take a break here, and thanks for calling. 1-800-348-2551 is the number. Tony Yank is here. Boy, what a fast-paced show today. We'll hit the home stretch and the lightning round coming up.
Support for WAMC comes from Bow Wow Bathhouse Resort and Daycare, South Deerfield, Massachusetts. For over 7 years, providing 10 hours of daily indoor-outdoor play, professional grooming, and retail shop, the BowWowBathhouse.com. The 1850 House Inn and Tavern, Rosendale, New York. Newly renovated boutique hotel offering romantic Hudson Valley getaways, 12 guest rooms, modern amenities, located close to winter activities, the 1850house.com. Berkshire Botanical Garden, Stockbridge, Massachusetts. Annual holiday marketplace featuring a gallery of wreaths, local vendors, crafts, and more, December 7th from 10 to 5 and December 8th from 10 to 4, berkshirebotanical.org. And the Preservation League of New York State, Albany. Protecting New York's historic buildings, districts, and landscapes since 1974. PreserveNYS.org.
one 800 348 2551. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here. Tony Yang, our guest, and back to the phones we go. Dan in North Adams, you're up. Hello, Dan.
Yes.
You're on.
I'm wondering if you could tell me about a book or a course that I could maybe take to improve my computer skills, especially something to help me in troubleshooting.
Dan, now, please don't misinterpret this, because I tell this to a lot of people. some of the best books I found out there for subjects that I don't even understand are these books for idiots.
Right. That's
what they're called. Yeah. They are great books.
Yeah, I like those.
Yep. Yeah. So, you know, if I had to make one recommendation, get those books because they're easy to read and they are very, very good. These guys have gotten the writing down correct.
Mm.
And I think I had one from years ago. Now, if I bought one now, it would be all updated, I'm assuming.
Yeah, they typically will release revisions once a year or once every couple of years. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if you're looking for a specific subject, it doesn't change much from year to year. So you could, you know, if you get a revision that's a couple of years old, that's still good.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay, and I'm wondering, could you say something about antiviruses too, the good ones or the bad ones?
Most of our customers run two brands of antivirus software. We use Symantec, and we also use Trend Micro. They are typically some of the best softwares on the market. I mean, they're basically three large vendors out there, and they're always rated on the top. So it's Symantec, Trend Micro, and oh my goodness, now I'm having a mental block. AVG is pretty good for personal computers. For the commercial market, some of the other ones out there are made by Panda is pretty good out there. That's right. That's the other one that I meant to mention.
Panda?
Yeah, there's the company is actually called Panda, and they use the Panda as a logo. That's a fairly good company.
Okay.
Yeah, I've used Norton before and McAfee.
Yeah, Norton is known as Symantec now.
Okay,
I think
so
they're doing away with the Symantec name. With the Norton name.
They've improved because in the old days it used to slow my machine down. I used Symantec way back when, you know, Windows 98 and Windows 95, and it was a tremendous drag on resources. But they're better now.
They've gotten better. They have many different versions depending on what you do. We get the corporate edition for our customers. We have mostly commercial customers. But for home, there's Norton 360, which is very, very good because it protects all aspects of your computer.
Okay. Well, thanks, Dan. We appreciate the call. Let's go over to Rita in Poughkeepsie. Rita.
Hi. My question relates to the Samsung Galaxy Tab 2. I bought it with the hope I could upload short little video clips of my students and myself playing music to my computer or to send it out, and I can't do that. It won't let me upload it to anything, and I can't send it in an email within the tablet either.
Hmm. Well, you have a email service provider because the Galaxy doesn't come with it automatically.
Right, I do, and I do understand that within the tablet, the email service provider, the last video I made might be a little bit lengthy to send out. It doesn't have the capacity in the tablet to send it out, but I was hoping to upload it to my laptop and then be able to send it out.
Right.
But it won't let me do that. It's incompatible, and Samsung is telling me that I need to download a third-party software, which I'm scared to do.
Okay. Even if you compress the video down a lot, you may find that you won't be able to send that through email, because most email providers will only allow you to send about 10 megs in size. So that's a pretty small file size for a video. You might want to consider doing using a service like Dropbox, which is free for personal use.
What is it called?
Dropbox.
Dropbox?
Right.
Okay.
So you can look it up, and what that allows you to do is you can drag these files off your Galaxy, off whatever device you're using, put it on their system, and then you can download it. You can send people a link, for example, to go there, password protected or not password protected, and they can drag that file and put it on their computers or on whatever other device they want. So that's a very, very convenient way of doing that. Now, there's also this company called Box as well. So there's Dropbox, there's Box. There's lots of different companies out there providing these type of services for free.
Okay.
All right.
All right, very good. Thank you very much, and happy Thanksgiving. Happy Hanukkah.
And same to you.
Okay.
My mental block before was McAfee. Another great company. That's
okay.
Right. So those are the three big ones.
All right, let's go to Gene in Gansport. Gene.
Hi. A couple little questions. First one is I'm really a Mac person, but my PC is a HP, 3.5 years old, started to buzz, and after I brought it into Staples, we discovered it was actually the hard drive, not the hard drive on the computer, but the external one that actually fit in it, but it was an external hard drive that I was backing up to that was buzzing. So I took that out, bought a new external hard drive to back up to, and it works fine, except that if I keep it plugged into the USB port and then turn the computer on again, my computer doesn't boot up. So I have to unplug the external hard drive, turn the computer on, and then I can put that hard drive in the USB port and back up to it. And I can't figure out why it's doing that.
Yeah, you know, I've experienced that on my own computers at home. One of the things you might want to try is, have you tried using another USB port on your computer?
You know, I haven't. I just took it on the one on the front because it was convenient, but I could try one on the back. That's the point.
It's funny because it took me a while to figure out what it was. I didn't figure out what it was, but I found an alternative, and that's to use another USB port.
Couldn't that be just a BIOS setting where
it could be a BIOS
boots
setting.
Boots up from that first, and if it's not there, then it goes to the internal drive.
Yeah. So you know, the simplest thing for you to do is maybe try another USB port and see if that gets it going, because that'll be the quickest way and the simplest ways of resolving that.
The funny thing was, I really thought my computer was going, and it was only that the external hard drive that was making the buzz along.
Yeah.
So that was a nice solution, because I thought I was going to have to replace it. I have one other maybe quick question, but there may not be a quick answer. It seems like all my MacBook Air, and when you buy a new computer, everyone is moving away from DVDs and DVD burners and everything else.
Yeah.
And I'm just wondering, what to expect, because for those of us who have gotten used to, burning DVDs, personal DVDs
right.
for friends, say, like I made with my Mac, I made a video of a class reunion.
Yeah.
And I put it on YouTube, but, and I do have an external DVD drive, so I can, and I did manage to get them to put in, iDVD for me when it was really, not allowed anymore.
Right,
but
right.
Still, they're going away from that, and it seems to me like maybe they're jumping there too quickly.
I
just wondered what you think.
Yeah, that is the new trend. The new trend on laptops is to make it slimmer, lighter, and make the batteries last a lot longer.
Yeah.
And one of the things that DVD drives do is add weight, and it also uses battery power because it's constantly on standby. So you're going to find more and more laptops without these devices. So the solution to that is an external DVD drive. So you got the thing that you need, even if they changed, even if you can't buy one.
Right. Are they going to eliminate DVDs, though? I mean,
you got a while.
No. They're not going to eliminate it altogether. They're going to continue selling laptops with DVD drives in it, but they're going to be mostly for corporate customers.
Okay.
So, you're going to be fine for a long time.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's good.
All right. Well, good for you.
I got a lot of stuff on DVDs. Thank you very much.
Gene, thanks a
lot. You have a great holiday.
And you too. And, of course, you're talking to somebody who bought a computer with a zip drive in it, which was the stupidest thing ever. I used it
about
once.
Wait, we need to get you upgraded.
No, this was a long time ago. Like, I got the zip drive. It's 250 megs. Used it one time, and nobody else had one, so it worked out really well. Gail in Adams, you're on.
My Gateway has a zip drive.
Ah, you see?
Okay, my Gateway has Windows 98 SE, and it's got hundreds of files on it. I do not and did not put it on the Internet. I have a newer laptop, Toshiba, with Windows 7, and an IBM ThinkPad with Windows XP, and I need a driver and a transfer medium to get those hundreds of files from my Gateway, Windows 98 SE, to the other two computers.
Boy, I was going to say, you know, use a carbonite and then back up and restore it, but I don't
use
think...
Use a what?
Carbonite.
Carbonite is an online cloud backup vendor. It's for free for personal use. They give you several gigs of space. But I don't think it supports Windows 98. It's been a while since anybody have asked me anything about Windows 98 SE.
Hey, it's second edition, you know.
Yeah, oh, yeah, that's right. SE,
hey,
yeah, you got the good stuff.
It even has the symbol for the USB port.
Nice.
So there is a there's a program. Well, I should say it's not a program. It's a software kit that comes with a cable, and I think it's made by Laplink.
Laplink,
yeah. It comes with a cable, it comes with the software, and I know that at least the older versions support Windows 98 SE. So that might be a good choice for you to just hook up two computers and get the information off the old one over to the new one. Now, the other option is...
How do I hook up the gateway? What you say it's got cables.
Yep.
What do the cables plug into?
It supports
cable?
USB cable.
Yeah, it does.
Or
parallel. It's a USB cable?
Yeah, USB cable or parallel cable. So, you know.
USB or parallel.
That's okay. Right. It supports both. So if you got USB, that's the easiest way to go.
It has a symbol for it.
Okay. Yeah, the second edition of Windows 98 was the first edition of Windows that supports USB devices.
Okay.
So you're in good shape.
Okay. So I do have a USB port, but I need a driver for it.
Yes, the Laplink software actually comes with it. It comes with all the software that you need. All you have to do is just connect it to computers, and the software will guide you through it.
Do I get a Laplink kit?
Yeah,
And is it one word, Laplink?
That's right. I've seen them at Staples, over at Best Buy. You know,
Staples?
Yeah, Staples.
Now, but I have to tell you, it's been a long time since I looked at it, but they did have it. If you can't find those at local places, I'm sure that you can get those online.
Sure.
But try Carbonite. See if it runs Windows 98. If it does, that's the best way to go.
Yeah, Carbonite's great. It does take a long time, depending on the speed of your connection, to upload things and download things, but it works really well.
How are you spelling Carbonite?
Carbonite.
Carbonite.
Terrific
right.
program.
Now, that's a software program?
Well, it's a service. So you would go to them and...
Oh, so yeah. you have to be online.
Yes.
That's right.
So you'd have to put that machine... She doesn't have that machine online.
I'm not online.
Yeah, so that's an issue.
The other option is to hook up a USB hard drive to it and just start copying files. It will take a while on a 98 machine, but you can copy files and then plug that USB drive onto your new computer.
That's a great way out.
That's another
way of doing it. Gail, thank you very much. Let's get another call in or two before the end of the program. Neil in Voorheesville. Neil.
Hi. I've got a laptop we bought last year. It's like a Dell XP15. And we use it to watch DVDs on a television screen since we don't watch television.
Okay. Yep.
While we're watching, frequently it goes from full screen down to some small screen, and it's really irritating. I have no idea how to fix it. Do you?
Let's see here. It goes from full screen to half a screen, or just the smaller. You see,
it's almost like you hit the not the minimized screen, but the in between the smaller screen size. It just pops down to a smaller screen in the middle of a movie.
Yeah. Are you using an HDMI cable?
Yeah.
That's unusual on HDMI. I mean, on some of the older stuff, it happens, but not on the HDMI cable. Now, from my experience, most of the time it's the way that your TV is interpreting the data coming from your laptop. So it's not a computer problem; it's more of a TV issue. You might want to check out the latest firmware for your TV. Some of these TVs have a USB plug in the back that allows you to update the latest firmware. That worked for my laptop in my office because we were having trouble displaying a picture full screen. But the new firmware did that. And also pay attention to the there is what's called a pixel per pixel display on a LCD TV monitor. So what it does is it interprets the output from your laptop pixel per pixel. Versus having a algorithm that tries to figure out what it is and then makes the best picture size on your TV.
So is that what you think? What it's doing? It's trying to figure it out, or it's
Yeah, I think what's happening is the TV is trying to figure out what the best way is to display that on a TV screen, and it gets confused every once in a while.
Neil, we got to wrap it up here. I apologize, but thanks for the call, and thanks to everybody who called in today. Tony, if anybody wants to get a hold of you at Gig Computers, how do they do that?
www.gigsystems.com.
All right. Well, have a great Thanksgiving. Drive safely, and we'll see you for the next program, which will hopefully be pretty soon. Maybe before 2014 rolls around.
Looking forward to it.
Good luck getting the Xbox. You're going for the PS4?
PS4.
All right, so you'll be one of those people out at 4 a.m.
trying to
get
it. I'm going to set up my tent tonight.
All right, well, that'll do it for today's program. Support comes from the Tang Teaching Museum and Art Gallery at Skidmore College, providing exhibits, public events, and educational programs for audiences of all ages for the Capital District and beyond. 518-580-8080. RJ Stables, Hadley, Massachusetts, locally owned dining establishment since 1960. Open for breakfast and lunch till 2, offering homemade breads, cookies, and pastries. Parking available, 413-586-4305. Ashokan, presenting a winter holiday festival and feast with Elizabeth Mitchell, Jay and Molly, Larry Campbell, and Teresa Williams. Happy Traum and more, Sunday, December 8th at 4 p.m., ashokancenter.org. And Best Cleaners, 11 locations throughout the capital region, offering tailoring, bridal, household, and shoe cleaning, plus home delivery, lookyourbest.com. Thanks to Zach Malloy at the controls. Our phones were answered by Patrick Garrick. Tom Job was our social media maven. Our producer, Jessica Blaustein-Marshall. I'm Ray Graff. Have a great Thanksgiving. Stay tuned now for a news update.